24 to 9 here on ABC Radio Perth. We almost missed coming back because, you know, we were discussing gifting and re-gifting, which is not the topic of today's hidden treasures, but perhaps could be one, Chris Parry, the art of re-gifting.
What? The art of re-gifting. It is an art. There is an art to it.
Well, you were just suggesting one box of chockies could do everyone.
Don't give away my secrets.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Neighbours might be listening.
Today, as I mentioned, well, I'm told in this script to say two treasures, double trouble perhaps might be one way of looking at it. We are talking to the lovely Chris Parry, our favourite travel writer and ABC producer's Saturday Breakfast book reviewer, and she cringes every time we say it, but now award-winning author as well, Molly Schmidt. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Good morning.
You didn't leave out the other bit about being a global force in writing.
Oh, shivers, sorry.
A global under the force table in writing.
Welcome to you both.
Welcome.
Yeah. Today we brought you in because we're chatting about book locations, real life places, local places where stories we have read are set.
Yeah, and we've done hidden treasures before on movie and TV shows. And I think that was a great exploration of those locations in WA where movies and TV shows have been filmed. But I think what we missed out on was that opportunity for imagination and a sense of immersion that a book gives you. When you watch a movie or a TV show, that location is there before you and you go, oh, I've been there or I want to go there. But reading a book brings in imagination of your experience there, not just the experience of the author.
As an author, Molly, and Salt River Road, of course, is the beautiful book that you've been working so hard on and has just won you an award. Talk to us, though, about what you are comfortable about, and that is the art of writing and, I suppose, how important location is to a story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the story, but for me, Salt River Road, massively important. So it's set in the Great Southern in the 70s, and the story is really grounded in that country. So it's set between Tenterton, which is a tiny little farming town, which, as far as I'm aware, has not featured in a story before, and Albany. And, yeah, I mean, it's got the Stirling Ranges, beautiful mountains as a backdrop, and some really important Noongar characters that I included. So the setting, really important there, because as a non-Indigenous writer, the setting became paramount because I consulted with those communities and those elders from that country to work out how to write those characters, which kind of means that the country but also the people who own that country are integral to the story. So, yeah.
It's such a nice feeling, I reckon. I remember, I think one of the authors that we'll probably get a mention through this conversation is Kim Scott. And when I was reading Taboo, like, it's set again in that same sort of area and down in the Great Southern and a place that I've spent a lot of time and to just read it, like you can visualise all those things and the time of year and what's going on in sort of the agricultural sector around you and in these small towns. So it can also just be that general feeling of connection or nostalgia or whatever it might be.
When really you see a street name that you know you drive down and a cafe that you know it actually is there.
Speaking of street names, I have a question for you, Molly.
Go ahead.
Salt River Road as a location was only visited by you after you wrote the book. How and why does that work?
So, I was actually in Albany less than 2 weeks ago, driving from Noongar up, where I was meeting up with one of the amazing elders that I'm working with, back to the Pronger Ups, driving along and saw the street sign, Salt River Road. And you're quite right, I'd never actually driven along Salt River Road before. And so the feeling that gave me was massive tingles down my spine. But, so that worked because I was writing... I hadn't driven down all the side streets and things. So I was using a map when I was writing a scene in the book where the characters drive from Tenterton to the Stirling Ranges. And so I was looking and I can still remember it's like Ronald Shaw, Gillam, Salt River Road. And I love the sound of Salt River Road. So I'd, written it from the map but had never driven along it.
Yeah, okay.
What are some of those locations, or those books, I suppose, that spring to mind of those locations? When Chris flagged this immediately for me, it was, you know, the merry-go-round by the sea, having spent so much time in Geraldton. And, in fact, that merry-go-round, I don't think it's still there. Is it still there?
The merry-go-round in the sea was an old... The real one was a barge that had sunk out in the water, and the stays on it, part of a mast, looked like a merry-go-round. But what they did in Geraldton was put a merry-go-round...
By the sea.
By the sea, which became known as a merry-go-round by the sea. But it was really one of those great books, wasn't it, that everyone had to read at school. Sort of Randolph Stowe, a really good introduction to a description of a regional environment in WA.
I'd love to hear your memories, I suppose, for want of a better word, at home, of those locations that you've been to, or those books that just made a certain place a little bit more interesting once you'd read the book, or maybe hit that nostalgia button as well. You can get in touch if you want to give us a call. That's always the easiest, 1300 222 720. Jump on and have a yak to us, or you can send through a text, 0437 922 720. For you guys, throw them at me. What other books do you think of when we have this conversation?
I'll let Molly go first.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about Geraldton. Geraldton's got a few books set there now. Invisible Boys by Holden Shepherd, amazing. And again, really grounded in a regional place. And I think it's really cool when you do have a setting that's a real place, because people that have been there, lived there, driven through there can connect with it. But people who haven't aren't behind either. They can still imagine it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was a really... really powerful one for Geraldton, capturing that experience of growing up as a gay child and gay man in Geraldton. Yeah, it's a big one.
Molly, I've got a text here. We have a farm on the corner of Salt River Road and Ronald Shore Road. Nice to hear it mentioned. Yeah. How nice is that? Chris, what about some books for you?
Two straight off the bat for me. Obviously, as a good Narrogin boy, growing up, A Fortunate Life was published in the early 80s by Albert Facey. So his descriptions as a boy of working on farms in the area and coming to Narrogin to do shopping and things like that was an amazing sort of experience to read a book about you, you know, that featured your hometown and the countryside around that town. I think for me as well, a book that I probably read every year is The Sharknet by Robert Drew.
Okay.
Which effectively is about... it's about growing up in the western suburbs in the 60s, and particularly featuring the serial killings of Eric Edgar Cook and his family's relationship with him. He worked for his father's factory, the Dunlop factory. But again, as Molly said, you know, with street names and those things you're familiar with, I think that's what I love about reading The Sharknet, is it's talking about street names in Cottesloe and Mosman Park and Victoria Park and, you know, the travels of this guy through that period of time. And it shaped this city as well. It made people put locks on the doors and lock up their windows and things like that. And it's for me, it's atmospheric, as well as just giving those places that we drive down so often.
Chucky has sent us a text on 0437 922 720. Ro, I love reading the early writings of David Wish Wilson. He mentions all the places in old Perth in the 70s. Which
he sure does. He also has a book called Perth that's all about Perth. He's an amazing writer.
Love A Fortunate Life. I don't know. I don't think I've read A Fortunate Life, but Diane Mandra.
That's the Albert Facey book.
Oh, the Albert Facey.
Yeah.
It helps when, you know, you listen to what you're saying to me, Chris. You did mention about school and the curriculum and the way that, you know, they try, I guess, the education department to bring in these books that are set here in Western Australia. Cloud Street was the big one for many of my generation, Tim Winton's Cloud Street. And that's, you know, another classic that I don't know if it's the nostalgia of high school and having, you know, that experience of reading the book, or those settings as well around Perth and the river.
And I think the great thing about those books is you do feel like you have to read them because it's, you know, for school. I have to read this for school. But I think quite often you come back and read them again
as well. Absolutely. I was going to say, I did not understand Cloud Street at school. Thought I did.
Yeah,
reread it as an adult and was like, whoa. Yeah. Right.
And the other one I remember at school as a non-fiction book was Island of Angry Ghosts. We come back to the Geraldton area by Hugh Edwards, a journalist in WA, all about the Batavia in 1629 and the mutinous events on those islands. And for me was like, oh my God, you know, how can this have happened and there not be a movie for me to go and rent?
Speaking of, like Red Dog, which you know was a book, and then, you know, Eb remembers these days of the movie being made. I think you were up at ABC Northwest at the time when all the craziness was going on and the announcement that, you know, something so special to the Pilbara community was going to be made into this movie that then everyone could appreciate the story and the location.
And from a travel point of view, I wonder how many people now stop by Dampier because of Red Dog.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to just driving to and from the larger communities of the Pilbara.
Yeah, I know. Certainly at my previous employer, when you'd head up there for any sort of work, it was kind of a rite of passage that, you know, the tour included a photo of you with the Red Dog statue.
And it's, to and go it's out clear to me as well that, you know, in coming months, people will be going to Salt River Road because they will have read this book and want to visit the location.
Maybe. That makes me feel so surprised and shocked. But, yeah,
that's
maybe.
Pretty cool,
it's a beautiful, beautiful road as well. Mm. You're driving along and you've just got the backdrop of the Stirlings the whole way. So.
What's on the other side?
Bush, farmland, weaves in and out of bush and farm. Yeah.
Molly, what else, what other books or collections do you think of when we talk about this topic?
There's a couple. I love Red Can Origami. So that's by Madeline Dickey.
Okay.
She also spent time in the Broome ABC office in her day. But yeah, so she writes fiction now. She also won the Hungerford a few years ago, actually.
Yeah, okay.
But she, so her book's set up north. The town's fictional. It's called Goobinge, but it's in the northwest and really interesting and looks at real issues, but again, through that fictional lens, opportunity to look at real stuff. She also consulted with elders in that area because her book is looking at a bit of a land rights issue between a mining company and the land. But just the way that she writes that, it's really vivid. You've got the red dust, you've got the dirt, the heat, the fishermen. Like, it's you're just right there. I think it really shows us how we have so many great opportunities in WA. We don't have to look very far for a backdrop.
So do you think you mentioned that that's a fictional town, the book Goobinge, and I think Jasper Jones has a book.
Corrigan.
Yeah, based sort of, we guess, around Corrigan.
Yeah.
And then you've got Tim Winton's Blueback, which could be any seaside town up and down the coast of WA. Mm. Do you like, both of you, to know the location, or do you mind it just sort of being fictional and you can just imagine it yourself, you know, that it's got a jetty and...
I think it's a bit like the book before movie thing for me. The great enjoyment that I take from reading is creating that entirely in my mind. And so what I think it should be and what the words are turning into in my mind and that creative side of reading, I really enjoy that. And then if I find out later that it was a particular location, you know, you can go and have a look and be like, oh, yeah, okay, this is what it maybe was intended to be. Mm. The same as a movie, you know, once I've had my chance to be creative with it, I'm happy to go and see. But if I've seen the movie or seen the town, maybe it just takes away some of that imaginative fun that I have when reading a book. What about you, Mark?
I like it. I like being able to ground it in a place. But I don't know if that's just because my experience with what I've been working on is so place sort
yes,
of important.
Centered. Yeah.
But I really like it. Even like, you know, Craig Silvey's Honeybee, I loved reading through that and seeing, you know, names of streets in Northbridge, seeing the Canning Bridge and things like that and being like, oh, yep, I go there every day. I don't know. For me, it kind of brings you into the story even more because you can walk along those streets with the character and you know what they look like.
Sometimes I find it a little bit frustrating. So with Tim Winton, I feel like I just wish he'd just say Albany.
Yeah, okay. I have the same sentiment. Okay. I got to agree there. Yep.
Is that a parochial thing?
I don't know. I don't think it would make much difference, surely. I mean, I'm not a literary scholar or anything, but I'm sure if you're reading it in the eastern states and it said Albany, it wouldn't really make that much difference.
That's why I wonder if what you like about, you know, a place that you've been to, it's kind of that thing that you just want it called out as being that location because you have that connection.
I know what you're writing about.
Yeah, exactly. I've been there. I've done that before. 11 to 9 here on ABC Radio Perth. A special Hidden Treasures this morning. We've got Molly Schmidt joining us with Chris Parry and myself, who usually are with you for Hidden Treasures this week. Molly, of course, ABC producer. She was, in fact, producing this show for a long time and she won the Hungerford earlier this year, just a couple of weeks ago.
And she invented me.
I am not your mother.
Oh,
she's not taking that responsibility.
Yeah.
Chris Parry.
Sorry, I should put that another way.
But we're talking about books and book locations, which is obviously a topic that Molly's really passionate about, which is lots of fun, and tying that into Hidden Treasures. And we've got a text that says, we hunted out the statues of Red Dog up north after seeing the film and talking to an old guy in Midland who actually met Red Dog as a truck driver.
That's cool.
When he was up there. Mm. Love those stories. Although I think, you know, people say when once you've something becomes as big as Red Dog did, you know, everyone tells you, you know, yep. like the big concerts that if you counted everyone who says they were apparently there that day, there's a whole lot more than they're really there. Yep. Another one says, Cloud Street frustrated me no end. No houses back onto the railway line on the Leadville side. You can't smell the river from that far away, either depict truthfully or fictionise fully.
Molly's put her pen under her chin and it made me, pointing at
you. It just made me think of that is the risk you run when you're writing, setting a real place. So, like, my supervisors, when I was writing my book, were like, if you're going to use real places, you've got to get it right. So I remember I had not used correct street names in Mount Barker because I didn't really think it mattered. And, you know,
but you'd
made up
Mount
a restaurant.
Barker as the town. Yeah.
And they were like, no, you're walking this funny line where if it's set, you really want your readers to trust you. So if you're choosing to write it, even though it's fiction, this funny blurred line in a real place, you got to get the place right. So you do then have this weird responsibility to get it right.
That's actually quite a nice line, actually. Either depict truthfully or fictionise fully.
Yeah.
There's no halfway between the two.
And I love the non-fiction world of local history. There's a wonderful lady, an author, who's since passed away, Maxine Laurie, and she's written a lot of local history books in WA. So I'm sure you've probably seen Beattie Park, book about Beattie Park, and how you turn that into a wonderful story, you know, through the words that you use, not just photos that show what swimming costumes were like in the 60s, but telling a story about local history, I think is wonderful, and describing what places used to look like if they backed onto a railway line or otherwise is it gives us a wonderful view of what the past was like.
Mm. Bevin Busselton, 45 years ago we met the new teachers at the Salt River School, and that friendship continues today.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? Just one title, you know, not just a title, but a significant one, a special one to you, Molly, but to just talk about that and then people's connection to this location and to this name.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I hadn't called the book Salt River Road. I actually was up in, I wasn't sure, and it was kind of a draft name, and I actually preferred my old title, which was Boat Dancing, which had a whole different background.
Right.
But then all these people were saying, like, oh, I lived there, or I went to school there, or I drive past there, and the elders all really loved it because for them it's a really special place. So it really kind of named itself, and all these people, yeah.
Well, I think our unofficial straw poll here in Treasures endorses that decision. I agree. I wish Tim Winton would just say, it's Lancelin, it's Margaret River, it's Albany. Was Lucky Leonard Tim Winton's... Lucky Leonard books, were they?
I think it was.
And they were a bit the same, all in those sort of coastal towns, and I always, Lancelin or Greenhead or one of those little places.
So I guess the thing with geographical features for me is it helps capture the feel and culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess you choosing a book title that is a location influences that as well, doesn't it?
How do you mean?
Well, you've got you're describing a geographical feature.
Yeah.
But I get the sense with your book that it goes beyond describing a geographical feature. It's all about the culture in the area as well.
Yeah, I think, interesting, something I almost didn't do. I had written this book as a draft years ago, and it did not have any Noongar characters in it and didn't really mention the culture. Yeah.
This same book?
Yep.
Amazing, because I know, having worked with you last year, how important that part of it is to you now and how much time you spent invested to get that right.
The book wouldn't be a thing without it. It's really interesting. But, I had avoided it because I didn't know how, right? Like, you have to get it right, and you have to do the research, and you have to work with the community, and I hadn't, and I didn't know how. So, and now it's like 2 years later, you know, went back, did my honours on it, consulted with remarkable Noongar elders who guided me every step of the way and have become friends. Yeah, it's super grounded in the culture, and it really is. There's stories that are fully inspired by things that they told me and their memories, and it's. I think it's really important if you are writing about a real place that you include the minority groups and the people that call that place home, and particularly the traditional custodians of that land.
And obviously you've done it beautifully. I can't wait to read it, Molly. What happens in terms of publishing after you win the Hungerford? What does the next 12 months or so look like?
So it's being edited at the moment, which I'm so nerve-wracking. I still can't believe the whole thing.
Do they spell check it?
I mean, I have to say I've spell checked a fair few times by this point, Chris Parry, but I'm sure they do.
What does the editing process, tell us about the editing process. How does that work?
So Georgia, who's the editor at Freo Press, she has it at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've got strict instructions that only one of us has the book at a time. So she's editing. I'm not supposed to touch it.
Right.
She gives it back to me just before Christmas, actually. And then I go through and look at what she's suggested. And I spend about a month on it as well, sort of marinating and making changes. Mm-hmm. And then we spend a few weeks together going back and forth until we're both really happy. And then it goes off to typeset, where it, we sort of get to see a first sort of draft copy of it in a book form. And then from the end of March, we won't be able to touch it again. It'll be printed.
Wow.
And then there's sort of a publishing schedule, so it comes out in November.
Ah, but, so we'll get you back to plug for the Christmas sales next year.
I hope they find some spelling mistakes because Molly and Ebony...
Well, you don't want them going to print, so I hope so too.
Molly and Ebony are always critical of my notes.
I am not.
Always lying through something.
Molly's description of Salt River Road is spot on. Great unknown drive, and it's the shortest trip to the Stirlings when you travel from Perth along Albany Highway. There we go. Molly, didn't send me a copy of your book, says Nola in Bunbury. You've been sending Nola our copies of other books.
Yes, lovely Nola. We sent her some books recently, but...
She's going to have to wait a little while longer. And we had a conversation about this the other day, which I thought was really interesting too, Molly. But the process of what that book ends up looking like and the cover that goes on it and that sort of thing, that's a whole process in itself as well.
It is. So I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, that I can collaborate with some of the Noongar artists in Albany for the cover. I don't know if that's going to happen yet, but I met with some women who are painting in Albany and saw some of their art, and I'm really hoping that we can make that be the cover.
But part of being a bigwig author, you don't necessarily get full control over that.
You actually don't at all. Like they say, we hope that you, like, we obviously want you to like the cover, but it's not really something
so
the
even,
author
even
does.
Even being a global force, you
don't
get that.
Oh, I'll keep you posted.
If they really knew who Molly Schmidt was. I find all of that really interesting because I think for most of us, it's not even a dream. You know, you think you maybe could... If you're good at creative writing at school, you know, pull something together and to have it published. And even, you know, a lot of athletes have gone into making children's books or things like that. But to have something that's been your labour of love for so long. And I just found that so interesting what you said about your first version of the book compared to where it ended up being and then winning the award. And now this process through your labour of love essentially gets taken out of your hands. And you just have to hold on for the ride and see what happens next. Chris Parry, we haven't asked you the all-important question. Are you answering it today or have you given that responsibility to Molly?
Well, I think that's a great idea to hand it to Molly. I'll go first. I'll have a crack at answering why book locations are a hidden treasure, and I'll give Molly time to think about an answer because I'm just talking here.
It's all right. You'll hit the news and she might miss out.
Our own imagination when we read always trumps our eyes when we watch something, and I think it triggers nostalgia of your own experience and also gives you an understanding of the author's experience of that location as well.
I think that the power of storytelling is massive, and even if it's fiction, being based in a real place, it can be the way that we learn and explore a real place, its issues, its culture. I think it's really powerful.
Good job, both of you. What a pleasure to have you come in, Molly, and join, who is always a pleasure on Hidden Treasures, in Chris Parry. Thank you so much to both of you. Chris,
thank
you're
you.
Not disappearing with Eb and I over the next couple of weeks.
No,
you're
going to
hang around.
I'm just hanging around. I'm not going into the sunset yet. Another couple of weeks to go.
We heard Justin Majex from Surfing WA say the same thing. He's going to hold strong. So good job. Have a wonderful Christmas, festive season, however you celebrate it, to both of you.
Merry Christmas to you both. Thanks for having me
and
on this
side.
To you
too. Thanks for coming in.